see if you can follow it up with an acquisition commitment. Out of the same source.
Yeah.
If we got some money like that, I know that we've talked lately about, in the past we've looked at land the town owns and where something could go. And
yeah. I mean, we have looked at the land, you know, over time, looked right. at land. Most of the land the town owns that's not for banks, for like recreation purposes. And we looked at all those tax title lots.
Right.
David, remember he was on the group for a while.
I forgot about him.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I bumped into him.
Yeah. Have you heard him?
And his wife was looking for a house. And, well, I don't know why.
He was moving or something.
In Charlestown.
Yeah.
And he said, "Hi, Mark." And I said, "Hi." I said, he looked at me. He was smiling. I didn't. He said, "David, I was on the first committee with you guys." I said, "Oh."
Right. So we did look at it. A lot of the properties the town owns, we might own tax title property, which is not really ownership. But, you know, we had talked about land donations, and all that's in the plan. I mean, but, I mean, it's hard to put the pieces together. And, I mean, that's part of the planning requirements the state is looking for does require you to go through what you thought might happen and evaluate it. And one of the things we had complained to them about was that you're kind of documenting your failures, because a lot of the requirements for affordable housing came in coincident with a recession that lasted a good long time. And even though we're out of it, so to speak, you know, Jeff mentioned about credit and financing private side. A lot of this, you know, they don't want to hear it. A lot of the banks or some of the other entities, it's just not there. But, I mean, the fact is it's still a need in the community. So what do? You know, communities don't swing hammers and build houses usually. So it's a lot about partnerships. It's a lot of, some of it's political will to have land that could be used for, and that kind of takes us back to multi-household, which would be a hard thing. I mean, you could put something like that in the plan, say, well, we need more multi-household zoning in the town.
Yeah.
You know, and we do. But, you know, where is a good question. And
not by my house.
Well, yeah. Right.
So Vin, if it, could you refresh my memory, the South Kingstown Housing Authority, the two major developments they have, Champaign Heights and Pointe Estates, I mean, the town have any skin in the game in the development of those properties?
I'd say
not as a model,
yes and mostly no, because the town council appoints the housing authority's board. They are autonomous, though, in terms of, and they, Jeff knows this well, their funding support is largely federal government.
HUD public housing.
Right. But they do up at Champaign Heights, they have some extra land, mm-hmm. which they could. And they, at one time, they had some ideas, and that's in the plan too. You know, but it's hard for them to get money, and they've got, you know, their own, you know, aging infrastructure and difficulties at their current location, particularly up at Champaign.
They have those huge units.
They have some 5-bedroom units up there, and. You know, and but we don't have, you know, they have, the most recent contact they've had with the town council was with tenants' complaints about a tenant. I don't know, were you at one of those meetings? Or?
Yeah, it was, yeah.
Yeah. But.
I meant like on the development side, just to get it up and running. I presume it was largely funded by federal sources, but I'm wondering.
Pretty much exclusively.
I would routinely put out notice of fund availability for construction of public housing. And you go in and compete for that money with the other housing authorities in the region. That's how they built the elderly units. You get it, you didn't get it. They haven't, the last effort, I mean, they built this existing housing in the 70s, I think it was.
Right.
And the town had a programmatic agreement for, I'm forgetting the numbers, but there was 18 units left in that agreement, which got the elderly housing.
Right. If they were to expand, I think the town would have to go back and modify an old original approval to allow for additional units.
Yeah.
Because what they had talked about up at Champaign Heights, and I thought it was a pretty good idea, was to build some new units and then move people that were in the existing facility to the new units and then rehab the other units. Because those units now, I guess they have like 60 amp services and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's probably like, demo and build
tearing them down.
Well, I mean, but you know, Housing Authority can't just... You can't displace.
Right.
He's got, so, you know, it's complicated. And we have interaction with them to some degree. A lot of times, like, we'll do environmental reviews for them and stuff like that. And sometimes they don't... I don't think they typically try to access CDBG monies. They kind of, you know, they have the, you know, they have a fairly small management staff.
Yeah, they can't. They're eligible to access.
Right, but they don't.
Narragansett has, East Greenwich has, Lost King's Fund has not.
They probably should, to be honest. It would, it, you know.
So, as far as, you know, town funding, just to follow that line of thought. So I know we have this affordable housing fund.
$10,000.
What is the fair share development fee? Are there other financial mechanisms? You can obviously do a bond, like Charleston did. Mm. Are there other recurring?
Well, the fair share development fees, and there's two components to it. And if you were, I don't know if you, I'll give you the quick version. There's impact fees that relate to two items, and they relate to open space and recreation. And the other component is school facilities. So impact fees can only be used to legally to mitigate impact of new development in a community. So what the school fee component has been used to pay down the bonded debt on the Broad Rock Middle School. Or on, I guess it's middle school, right? It's been junior high, middle school, And that's so, you know, because impact fees, new house comes in, there's an impact on town services and facilities. There's also a formula that figures out how much recreation open space land is needed per 1,000 people, and then you back that out based on a value of acreage and then come up with that fee. So that's calculated on a yearly basis. So as it stands, those two fees, you know, don't go to affordable housing. Now, there's also the real estate transfer tax, which a portion of which, by election of the town council some years ago, goes towards open space acquisition. And those are, you know, a fair amount of money comes in via that. We did, as a committee several years ago, had a conversation with the South Kingstown Land Trust about thinking about about a model. Like Vermont has this really interesting model where they combine open space and affordable housing production together.
Interesting meaning effective?
In Vermont, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very effective in Vermont, you know. At the time, there was not in particular, am I understating it or overstating, there was not a lot of interest from the land. But we did meet with Clarkson and Joanne Riccitelli. Yeah. And
so just so I understand, the share housing fee, it's split between open space and school.
Right.
Is that by state statute or is it local ordinance?
It's defined in local ordinance.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it's enabled at the state level, right?
Yeah, but it's specific. I mean, it's impact that's placed on new housing development and... You know, the fee is different for an accessory apartment versus a traditional single-family home or multi-household. They pay less, or elderly pays less. And affordable housing developments don't pay that at all on either.
So what I'm getting at is it sounds like there's a very slim opportunity maybe through the fair share development fee for a sharper definition of open space as it may pertain to space available for housing. And maybe a larger, but still demure, opportunity for the real estate transfer tax.
Well,
open space, which seems to be something that has to get wrestled with locally. It's a council decision.
Right. The state, you know, when you, and Mark knows about the real estate transfer tax because, it, you know, when a sale goes through, it's a fee that gets paid. State grabs onto a percentage, And the town clerk, Dale, knows how that breaks out. And some comes back to the town. The town has the election of doing, you know, can all go into it in a lot of communities, probably just goes in the general fund, end of story. But at some years back, the town, and you know, the town issued bonds, and there's still bonded debt being paid for open space purchases. So a lot of that money goes to that. But, I mean, could the town change, you know, could the town leaders change that? I suppose they could, but, you know, with the knowledge, I think, you know, in the context of knowing that certain, you know, I'm not sure what the bond debt repayment schedule is, but because if it doesn't get paid through that purpose, the bonded debt goes onto the general tax base, and then we all get to participate. And to some degree, that's happening too, but it's at least diminished as an impact on the tax base by virtue of the real estate transfer tax going towards it.
So I think what I'm getting at is, you know, sitting through the capital budget discussions, I didn't see anything for affordable housing. So I go through the operating budget.
Yeah.
I don't expect, unless you've got something already in the works, that there's any additional skin in the game from the town to go towards affordable housing. You know, we're a little bit north of halfway, you know, towards the 10% goal. So mm-hmm. I'm just, you know, like I said, it's the whole policy piece, which is really complex. I've appreciated, you know, sitting in the meetings to understand folks that actually do this on a daily basis, how to make it work. It's not easy. It takes a long time. I'm not advocating that you just throw money at developers, but certainly when you have the funding, then you have a reason to pull people together to talk about how you actually move forward.
I mean, you know, could a bond go on the, you know, next election to see, you know, I don't know. Bonds can be authorized and not issued until, you know, I mean, which is the way you do it, actually, if you get bond authorization.
You get the approval and then, like...
Well, then you wait till you have a project.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because the town actually has some open space bonds that were approved that haven't been, you know, put forth.
Yeah.
I mean, we're working on one open space acquisition, one serious one now down in, you know, East Matunuck, Snug Harbor area at this point, but, you know, other... There'd have to be other things come in into play too.
I've said before, and I think we should make it as a recommendation, that whatever the town, from any of the, maybe they can't do it with the bonds that are there now, but if there were ever any new ones issued for open space, that it has to contain an affordable housing unit part of it. And I think that we could present that to the citizens, and they probably think very seriously about it. We've spent a lot of money in buying the open space. I had a reason to go in to see Joanne a couple of weeks ago, Riccatelli at the land trust, and we talked about what a client's property and what I needed, and I said, I just want to bring up again mixing the land trust with affordable housing. She went, our members don't want to do that. And I looked at her and I said, I'm a member. I've been a member since it started. The question is, have they actually discussed it with their members? I don't remember getting anything.
Me neither. I don't remember.
Right. So yeah, I think that there's a lot of, you know, that's what they think. And I know some of these people, and they don't want to see a water table pipe sticking out of any land. But I think we should push on that end.
Well, what I would recommend pushing on, if anybody was going to push on anything in that regard, would be dollars only, not locational relationships.
No, that, yeah.
Right.
So don't tie affordable housing to an open space parcel, but allow whatever
percentage
of the bond.
20% for the first 5 years, 25% after that, and 30 after that,
yeah,
something like that.
Some of the Massachusetts towns do that too, without locationally.
You don't want to.
I mean, I thought location because they actually buy land.
They
and
buy
some
land.
Some of them have road frontage.
But you got to look down the road a little bit. You're not going to get enough money probably
to build it.
To build it,
And so you're going to have to rely on some other source, and the other sources in the state won't go outside of land use 2025, or what the hell is it called now?
Yeah. The urban service area. Urban services boundary.
Yeah. So that's why I'm saying just pass a dual bond. Two purposes. A majority of open space to make it sexy for those guys. A little bit of a fall. I bet you it'll pass.
I think we need to say that to the town council. When they do it the next time, we need to be involved.
But you've got something to have an issue yet, so this ain't going to happen in the near future.
Well,
so my understanding, so I'll be perfectly clear, is that the town staff has warranted that there's a lot of bond debt that just expired. Are they proposing any new bonds in November?
I don't think so. No, at this point, I don't think so. When they talked about the community rec facility, this bond debt's being retired, and I think the bonded indebtedness of the town now is at a lower point than it's been in quite a number of years. You know, I mean, Steve is one hell of a manager in terms of the money, and retiring that debt.
Put that in the minutes, Jenny.
It's
true.
It's the truth.
Yeah, no, I think the town is in a very strong position, right. And they've been clearly, making the point that the rec center is old bond, money that was approved but not sold, and they're getting ready to do it.
Right.
Putting other money that comes in through the fair share development fee to absorb the increased cost over time, the cost of the project.
Well, they were allocated some undesignated fund balance as well as recreation impact fees towards that facility.
So if we had to stack up, maintenance of infrastructure and, the school systems and open space, how far the town has gone towards their goal.
More than 30% of the town is preserved open space.
I don't know what their goal is, and then the last thing is to put affordable housing next to it and say, what are the capital needs of the town? I'd be curious to see what that looks like. And, chasing affordable housing is a different animal. It's different than maintaining the streets and the stormwater systems. But I just haven't seen the funding put forth by the town, as opposed to the town of Charlestown, which decided to do a focused investment, and it's taken a long time to get there.
Mm-hmm.
As Mark has said, many times, said tonight as well, if you could co-join the land trust and try to partner. I mean, we're trying to figure it out.
Mm. But,
I think we should ask for a meeting with the board of directors. I think that's what we were kind of looking for at the time.
Last time.
That wasn't in the works, and maybe it isn't again.
Yeah, the Vermont model, kind of what they do, they blend they would protect a farmstead area, but they would also provide, they'd make these little farm hamlets, with some kind of workforce housing associated with the main farm building. Huh. So they would maintain what the landscape looked like really nicely, and they provide very modest, Vermont has that characteristic of very small village and hamlets, and a lot of times developing on a road frontage and all kinds of land out back. And so that model has worked really nicely for them. And that was what was kind of proposed. I remember we had some, in the letter, there was some quotes from a professor in Middlebury College, and it was a good piece of correspondence for the entree, but it didn't. And we did have the meeting, and then that was it. But the land. But I mean, I don't know if times have changed a little bit. I mean, land preservation is still important in the town, but we're not doing a lot. The last land preservation project that the town participated in was the Browning Farm on Jerry Brown Farm Road, which is not even that huge of a farm. It worked out well, and the town's monetary participation in that was fairly modest, most of it.
Because they really worked to raise money.
Well, they did, and they also got money from the Farm and Ranch Land Preservation Program, which is state dollars through federal resources. And actually right now there's a expectation that the Whaley Farm is coming forward.
They want bunny rabbit land now, don't they?
What's that?
Isn't there a push to preserve Indian cottontail habitat?
The eastern...
New England cottontail.
Is it?
New England.
Indigenous species.
Yeah. But that, it's like 40-odd acres, the Whaley Farm. But,
that doesn't have a lot of frontage.
Yeah, but, and Jeff makes a point about the state won't provide money for density housing outside the urban services boundary.
Why don't we propose our own urban area? Peacedale,
well,
Wakefield.
That's in it.
That counts.
That's in it.
Okay, so it's not Green Hill, it's not West Kingston.
No.
Existing villages are
a little
okay.
bit in West Kingston, actually.
Designated growth centers are okay. Or urban water and sewer are okay.
West Kingston in and around the train station would be an area where affordable housing could get state support through the block grant or whatever. But, it could be, have a conversation. It might be an idea to have a conversation with this group, with the town council, to talk about resources, whether they be local, state, federal, better coordination, other policy considerations, or with the planning board, because the planning board is, embarking on a lot of work with the comp plan. The comp plan does set the table for policy across the community, and the town council has to adopt, for the comp plan to become effective locally, it's adopted by reference as an ordinance by the respective town council of the community that it,
I think it would be good for us to meet with the planning board first, and then after some time ask them meet with the town council. Mm-hmm. Say that we've been stymied because of economic situation and we're coming out of it. We'd like to plan.
Well, it's probably
over the next 10 years
apropos
to
in
have
some
a plan.
Respect. Yeah, because the comp plan is going to be revised. The housing elements, one of the most important elements of that plan, and so maybe it's a good time for it.
Yeah.
And part of it's money, part of it's policy, part of it's partnership, part of it's regulatory, part of it, a good part of it's private market, private financing, infrastructure, community will, community won't, which is easier to find than community will, in my experience. And,
we also need to make sure the community is aware of the issues and what needs to be done.
Right. Education, which is...
We did that early on.
We've had a couple of really good meetings in this room where, the local consortium, and it was a few years ago, but we had all the Washington County communities here, and every seat in the place taken that.
Yeah, that's cool.
And to see where we were at, and it was like there was enthusiasm and, not that that's gone. And we've had, some successes here and there. Not enough of them, but, And part of it's...
Successes really come from, zoning and new subdivisions and affordable units. And there wasn't much of that for most of the...
A big component of a tool that we had talked about was inclusionary zoning for properties that, for new subdivisions proposed.
Right.
We've only seen a few of units produced that way. But, there's been a big slowdown.
Right.
And, now you get any... there's a pre... It hasn't even entered the application stream, but there's a property up in Kingston that... Persurin owns, Persurin Properties, 118 acres, and they want like 52 units as a comprehensive permit, to 25% of the units. It came before the planning board. It was a really terrible plan a few years ago, and it was tabled. There was a lot of local opposition to it.
Can I ask where that is?
Where?
Yeah.
Old North Road, easterly side, just up past the... The church, Flag Road, just passed up there.
Oh, the corner.
Yeah.
High water table. I remember that. That's also.
Yeah.
That wasn't that old. That wasn't that long ago, was it?
It was a couple of years. Mm. Yeah. It's called Fieldstone Farm.
The one that wanted like the 100 curb cuts coming out.
Oh, it was a god-awful plan, but it's coming back. And it's ironic that it's repackaged. It's like, They're kind of rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic, I guess. But now they're saying they want to have accessory apartments as part of the, as the affordable component, 25%, which is the requirement as a comprehensive permit. So they submitted a master plan, and we just signed the certificate of incompleteness today.
Incompleteness?
Oh, yeah.
Good.
You know, it doesn't have the proper letter from the water, Kingston Water. It doesn't, I mean, there's a lot of things, but, it, you know, it just, it'll be a very, it'll be a really controversial project, guaranteed.
Yes.
It's a very tough piece of property. They've got to extend water up. The school up and around the corner has all kinds of problems with their well, and so they're proposing that
Kingston Hill.
Yeah, I was
the one around the corner.
The one up on Stony Fork.
Yeah, Groden Network.
Yes. Yeah. And they've had problems with their public well. The interesting thing is, so they're saying, well, we'll extend it up and around the corner. Yeah. And they originally tried to get the school to pay, and the school said, yeah. I don't think so. So now they say, but if you have a public well, and Ken knows this better, certainly better than I would, it's a 400-foot radius. You can't put any septic systems within that.
Unraveling.
So that crimped the style of this project.
Yes.
And this piece would actually be a hell of a good open space piece to acquire and maybe develop it on a really modest scale, because it backs up and ties into land the town owns that goes out to Route 138, the Noyes Farm property.
Oh yeah, with the strips of land that
just to the east of that.
Yeah.
We own 249 acres, kind of opposite Rose Hill. It goes way in. I bought it from the Meyer family a few years ago.
Oh yes.
And paying the bonds back. So that's beautiful, beautiful piece of property. But I mean, that's going to be a project coming forward. It's just, you know, the development and community acceptance of affordable units in development, that's not an easy thing.
No.
I mean, Route 2 subdivision, that was pretty good. Mm-hmm. And that developer's crying like a...
They really seem to be.
Yeah. Petrucci, he's crying about that, saying, I can't build these units, can't sell these units, can't make any money on these units. Not sure I agree with those.
You know, we've been doing pretty well on that. That we have some of them, the resales of the affordables up across from the pump house there with the apartments.
Oh,
and
Meadowbrook.
Yeah, Meadowbrook.
Yeah, Meadowbrook and the Rocky Brook condos.
They were like really slow right in the middle of the recession, but they're going now.
Yeah, I saw a few of them sold recently.
Yes.
Got two people from Town Hall live over there. Carrie Beatrice and Patty.
Pat.
And Patty north of that's pretty nice.
They're very nice. Mm. I was in Patty, you know, had me do that with her, so I had been in them before.
Right. And you know, that's urban core development. And, you know, one of the things we do face is, you know, it's tough is community acceptance. And, you know, we could say, oh, infill is a great thing in the villages.
Yeah.
Yeah, Oak Street.
Tillotson, backyard.
Right.
Kid.
It ain't easy.
Yeah. Right.
But I think need-wise, family housing, rental, special needs populations. Mm. You know, look at that Kenyon Terrace. With that building's coming out beautifully.
The neighbors should be so thrilled. I mean, the best
right behind Kenyon's department store.
It's very handsome.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, it is.
I'd love to see it.
Mm. I went by it yesterday.
Yeah.
It's coming out.
You have a ribbon cutting. You can go.
I went to court.
The old perspectives place.
Pardon?
The old perspectives place?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Behind it.
Gorgeous. Yeah. Even the small building, they put the.
Yeah. We still got $50,000. We don't know what to do with it.
Well, I know, but.
They don't know what to do with it?
Well, they were afraid of another legal challenge with the release of funds in the paper.
Yeah.
You know, when we release CDBG funds, you have to put an ad in the paper, right? Request for release of funds. And that
unless
can open.
An exempt activity.
And that can open the. So there's a pending request from Opportunities Unlimited. Is that right? No. Is that
yes, that is right. But I. There's,
pending request for the state to take that $50,000 that was going towards the construction and have it be utilized for furnishings and equipment, which wouldn't be subject to that same requirement. So, but I mean, that project, I mean, the neighbor, two lawyers just happened to live next to it, and they fought it tooth and nail and almost killed the project. And it was like, oh my God, I mean, I remember the planning board loved it. The church next door loved it. And there was a couple of neighbors, and you know, I think at the end of the day, they're going to say,
it was a group home.
It was a group home. And it wasn't even changing news,
I remember Deidre talking in favor of it.
Deidre DeRozier, yeah. A lot of community leaders come out.
She was a neighbor.
It still came, it still went to court, and it was actually remanded to the planning board to strengthen the decision.
Language.
And then it was challenged again, and it was upheld by the court. I mean, well, as we know, it's not easy, but you know, that when I drive by that, I smile every time because I say, good.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, damn good.
Yeah. I was thinking about, suppose the affordable housing people in the state went to the Chamberlain Foundation and say, because of what's been happening with the economy, our production of affordables has just been very disappointing, and we could use your help. I mean, I just saw that they gave out $2 million, $3 million or something to various, because they seem to change their thrust.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's about buildings, sometimes it's about actions.
It used to be about open space a lot, but they haven't done that recently.
Right.
Libraries is big. That's been consistent. They
got some money a few years ago, the Historical Society.
Yeah. Which is good.
All good, but maybe they could, if we could present for the good information to them, and maybe it'll take 3 years to get to it because they must plan way ahead. But they, you know, it's a very important need. Maybe they'd be sympathetic.
That Brookings Institute report that was just issued the other day, which I haven't read, but I was reading about it, and it was an editorial, it's either in today's journal or maybe yesterday, and they talked about public-private partnerships and how foundations need to get involved in some of these issues of economic stimulus. And housing is that, although it's not always thought of as the most direct connection between economic development, but there is obviously the connection there.
I'd like to know what North Kingstown's going to do if Quonset does, you know, take on another 1,500, 1,800 employees, and they're all coming in, you know, $17 an hour. You know, where are they going to go? You know, the curious thing for me is there's this. It's just the practice of going to the state or the feds for the subsidies for ultimately what ends up being a local decision that drives the progress or lack thereof in a community. You know, it's a seaside community. You know, fishing industry's drying up. Not much activity in the mills, you know, so people will retire here, people of means can move in, there's that slow gentrification that happens, but there's the, I don't know, it seems to be the first step, you know, to have the community reach out to other sources to solve our problem. You know, so I'll go back to my point of sitting through the capital budget meetings and seeing the town not put skin in the game. Not to say that the expenditures that are in the town SIP are good, they are, but we have to wait for others. You know, our performers to wait for others to solve our problem.
Well, I don't. I would say this. I don't think funding for grants and stuff like that, or loans, or would be a capital budget. They might be a larger operational budget. You know, capital budget expenditures are for capital infrastructure equipment, and it's not programmatic typically. It's facility infrastructure, but on the public side. So the opportunity for the conversation exists in the, we have a budgetary process that really consists of two parts. The capital is a component, and that's the starter. You know, it's a process which can be at times rather excruciating from staff perspective, because it's lengthy and complicated and know, and extremely detailed. But you know, right now the town's expenditures towards that, you know, it just hasn't been necessarily seen as a priority for the community. You know, and then in the context of the larger budget, you have the tax effort for the community. You know, would the community support it? I don't know. People don't want, you know, budgets have been lean for quite a while, and there are state requirements to cap what, you know, the levy or the,
cents per. Yeah.
Well, it's been a declining percentage, and I think it's at 4% now. And South Kingston hasn't been anywhere near those caps for a number of years.
It's done a good job.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, and that hasn't been easy. You know, we had, you know, economic difficulties, you know, with American Schneider Electric had all their tangibles they pulled out of there, you know, millions. That was really big a few years ago, and there's a lot fewer people working there than used to, and half of that building is empty, frankly. Yeah. You know, but none of this is easy.
They have Town Water now, right?
They have Kingston Water. They have sewer, too. Over in West Kingston, yeah.
That might be a future multi-unit.
We use Schneider?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
We need jobs.
Yeah, they say still 800 plus jobs there.
Oh, there is. Mm-hmm.
I think it's the third largest employer in the town. Good job.
They're not
too.
Making things anymore, are they?
Not there.
They have 800 administrators?
Yeah, they have the IT, some of their personnel, testing, training. They have these, it's kind of cool actually, they got buildings huge.
Yeah.
Huge. They have these labs where they do component testing and training. They bring people in from all over the world to go there.
I wonder if the Hampton Inn is.
Hampton Inn is one of their best clients.
Yeah.
Because they actually spoke, URI talked about building a boutique hotel.
Right.
Schneider would like that.
Okay.
Because they bring people in a lot, by train a lot, and then it's hard to get from the train to there.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, they might have room to build a hotel at one of the end of the building.
Could fit.
It wouldn't be good for the Hampton Inn.
Yeah, well, supposedly there's room for another hotel, and hotels are a good development vehicle for a community because, you know, do provide jobs and they do provide expenditures and bring money in. Yeah. But the town also gets a piece of the hospitality tax, occupancy tax, which comes back. Some goes to the state, some goes to the town.
My parents would appreciate it too.
Yeah, they've got a real strong relationship with URI, right? Yeah.
Who'd you say?
No, having another hotel over there.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the Hampton Inn is the official hotel of the URI Athletics.
Just
be listening on the radio to any of their sporting.
Ah.
Which is not super close to URI.
No. I think Richmond has some interest there. Cambio is looking at doing some work out there, so there's a hotel.
Oh, Richmond?
Yeah, that's with Denise last week. That's all you're saying. This can't be official for easy approvals.
On the Commons property?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, because that other deal seems Richmond to be
Commons?
Falling apart. Yeah. Last I heard, there's going to be a water park out there.
That's,
yeah.
Hotel with that,
so we're going to be putting an RFP together with the planning board, and ideas relative to housing would be really good to hear. And I mean, certainly some things emerged tonight. I don't know if people have other thoughts or.
Should we schedule a meeting with them? Should we just go to the next few or whatever ones are appropriate for us to be there to talk about housing?
Well, you want comments on this guidebook?
Well, that guidebook is regulatory, you know, it's been passed into. If you have some.
Well, some of the ideas.
They have some, they have a lot of policy ideas they articulate.
Not so good.
Do you have some specifics on that? Or?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, well, if you do, be glad to hear them, you know. I mean,
I have
honestly,
one. I'm looking at their rehab section here. Real quick, just jumped into my eyeball.
Well, I just think, I'm back, we talked about it. I think rehab. to try to have a stronger effort to maintain our housing stock, which is, you know, is than we do now. You know, it's the building officials. That's a part of his job, but it's not a focus. Some, not to say hire more people per se either, but you know, if we preserve our, you know, one bad home in a street that lets, that gets, you know, downtrodden, you know, it affects everybody badly. You know,
but isn't that going to take money?
It might. It takes enforcement. It takes education. It takes resources. It doesn't necessarily mean the town's spending it, but it might be. It could be through the CDBG if the people are eligible, or whatever. The volunteer efforts. The Elks have a program they've been doing recently.
I read that in the paper there.
Yeah.
People did to go in and.
They did 12 different projects in the last year for, I think, elderly, and you know, I think all the people would have qualified for CDBG stuff. We actually even might even be an idea to try to parlay that a little bit with the CDBG.
I talked to Ken about it at one point, but it never went anywhere. But Neighbors Helping Neighbors, which is based in that Episcopal Church down in Charlestown, they formed a 501c3, Dick Sarda, the old town administrator in Charlestown.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of affiliated with it. And we've done some work with them.
But, yeah, that Elks program, they did 12 projects. They had 800 hours of volunteer times. They coordinated with Boy Scouts to do, like, cleanups of yards. They rebuilt a bulkhead for somebody. They did handicapped access ramps. And they got, you know, a $10,000 grant from the National Elks organization. And I guess they just got another $10,000 grant, which is, the maximum. We written a letter of support to the town administration, glad to do it too.
Yeah.
You know, Ken Kennerson from the planning board.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, who's like volunteer extraordinaire guy.
Yes.
So, yeah, he's a great guy. And but it's a cool project, and so they're going to actually talk to that town council at the next council meeting. They're going to do a report. Ken's going to do a report, and announce that the program's going to have another year. And I think some of the lumber, I think Arnold Lumber and others gave them like free whatever they needed. So, you know, that's a good community thing.
Right.
And, you know,
is that
stuff
just
like
the
that
SK
can.
Or?
I think pretty much, but they may, you know. The Elks do a lot of stuff really quietly.
Yeah.
That's really, you know, beneficial to the community.
The Boy Scouts came to the shelter. They cleaned up the whole yard. They laid wood chips under the swing sets. They built a teepee that was from all donated materials. Really did a nice job.
Yeah.
They did a really nice job.
Yeah.
Right. The shelter.
The shelter in town, the Domestic Violence Resource Center's shelter.
Oh.
Did a really nice job.
Yeah, that's cool. I mean, that, because, you know, resources, as we've been talking, that is always tough, but human resources and community resources, those, if you can marshal them, you can do a lot of good stuff. You know, low cost, which everybody's always worried about a dollar, and, you know, I mean, that's just the way it is. But, you know, not to say the dollars don't have to come from somewhere, but.
Yeah. Hmm. And a question regarding the timeline for the comp plan work. What is the timeline? What's the.
Well, we're not, you know, realistically, June 1 isn't going to happen. I think we're going to try to finalize the scope with the planning board at the next planning board work session, which is February 23rd, maybe, something like that. We talked about it this past Tuesday evening. And then get out in the street and hire somebody and then get going from there. But we talked about prioritizing elements that needed the most work for the first efforts, right?
Right. Yeah. So do we want to meet Affordable Housing and Planning Board after the next work session, once we've hammered out where do we want to prioritize and push the housing towards the top and then meet?
Because housing is one of the bigger effort areas,
right,
as we talked, yeah.
So let us know when it's appropriate.
It might be March could be a real good time to to meet, and I think the board had talked about meeting with you folks anyway. That could be.
But we wanted to see the scope.
Yeah.
Which you said you were going to send around.
Let us know.
Right.
I mean, we could do it as part of this, or if we need to have this meeting, we'll just do that as an extra.
Yeah. Right.
So you do your work with comp plan updates, and I'm sorry, is it your intention to try to get a 10-year approval?
Well, that's the only approval. We have a 5-year approval that's right in place now.
So you'd submit it sometime, whatever.
Then no, I don't know about whatever, but, you know, I think there's going to be a legislative easing of that requirement because, you know, realistically, more than half, well, 3/4 of the communities in the state won't meet that, and statewide planning couldn't even turn them around in that time frame either. So I think we're just going to try to lay out in the scope of services kind of a milestone chart as well.
And any idea what I'm trying to get at is, you know,
I don't know what you're trying to get at.
We're midway through the current budget process, and then we're into the operating budget piece.
Well, so, but the comp plan, it's not disassociated with the budget, but it's not following the same track.
So what I'm suggesting is that after you do the comp plan updates, we're into next year.
It will be in the next budget year, definitely, yeah.
So, as I kind of paid attention to, policy issues as they've been folded into this capital budget process, I'm saying, you know, clearly, in the fall, there's good staff work that's led up to a draft capital budget, the performer budget. Mm. So I'm just trying to understand, as you embark on this comp plan update, will do you think it'll be ready? If there were any substantial suggestions for funding in time for next year's budget?
Well, I think the comp plan might say. If it was a recommendation for establishment of a funding source, it may not, and it's in there now, actually, consideration of a funding, a small but a predictable funding source for affordable housing support. That's in the plan now. The comp plan usually will be less, it wouldn't say put $1 million bond, for example. You wouldn't generally see something that specific out of a policy document that's on a broad base, a vision-based policy document. So it's not, whatever work is on the update, it's probably not going to be something that would be reflected in the budget that starts on July 1.
So that's good information. So there is guidance in the current comp plan that suggests that, the town as a whole will get some funding source.
Yeah.
So that's something that could be carried forward today. The likelihood that could get wrapped into the current budget that's getting ready to get deliberated is probably very low. But certainly for next year, presuming that same philosophy will be included and maybe added to and modified.
But it's not going to hang a dollar amount on anything.
Right. So at some point, there's a policy body within the town. It would be at the planning. I'm guessing maybe your department, or maybe in conjunction with the planning board, as we feed into that. I'm trying to understand.
Well, the planning board is responsible for the.
In the right direction. So,
the planning board is responsible ultimately for, I guess, the content of the comp plan as it gets delivered to the town council for the formal consideration of acceptance.
I mean, we got that $10,000 probably 4 years ago.
Yeah.
By requesting it in the next budget, I guess.
Yeah, I mean,
we could do it again.
It hasn't been accessed as talked about as seed money,
right.
Placeholder money, and then I remember at the time there was discussion that if a project came forward that was of a particular quality and urgency, the council might consider. The council in place at the time said they may consider, additional resources from.
Yeah,
either reserve or
land,
or whatever.
Or something to help. The problem is, when we started talking about that, there was money. Hmm. You were talking all the time about these different things, and then they've just all dried up. So the town might say, is it going to get used? You haven't used the 10,000.
Well, right, because there was an approval conditionally what Jeff wanted to do, but then the owner pulled out. Well, that might have had a chance to do something.
Well, it was an uphill struggle, but it had a chance,
yes. Yeah, I mean, there were some other issues with that property, flood zone and what have you, but that would make it challenging. Yeah. So, could somebody go to the budget hearings now and discuss, this issue in the, with, sure. Is there stuff in the comp plan that would say, you know, this is worthy of discussion? Yes, there is. But, you know, so the translation of policy to budget, you know, that can be a bumpy road.
Yeah.
Usually is. But what it's worth. It's, you know, always interesting.
You know, when you think about, we're going to build this new gym, and we haven't produced much affordable housing since we started here 8 or 9 years ago. And we only did because of what we did with zoning, what you guys did with zoning.
Well, I mean, there was a few good projects that came through. You know, the La Casa was a good project, and Brandywine was a pretty good project, 10 units there. And the ones next to the police station, the supportive housing. You know, I wouldn't, you know, look at it as, you know, glass half empty per se either.
No.
Because we're considered state, you know, it's been a tough, it's a difficult thing, which we all know, statewide. I mean, there were a couple of years in the, you know, between, I think 2006, we only Providence produced more units in a couple of years, that year, than South Kingstown. We were second in the state. You know, and our percentage is, what, 5.43?
Yeah.
You know, and that's not where we need to be, but it's not.
Yeah, no.
It's more than town of Charleston.
Yes, it is.
Good stuff happening, but not the aggressive kind of stuff.
Well, yeah.
That you do if there was money available.
Well, and to that point, as you pointed out with the rec center, it's a good project. It makes perfect sense as far as where it's located. But the council and the staff have also said, well, you know, we've got pretty substantial undesignated fund balance, and they move recreation pack fees over, and they also move a good chunk of change on the $450,000 over to get to the right amount of money to help fund the project because it's a priority.
I'm not saying it's wrong.
Right, right.
It started years ago in terms of the bond. And,
right, and I guess my point there is just that, you know, there's a mechanism, as you're saying, there is for affordable housing to get funding over. So the rec center was a priority for staff, and a long time ago, voters approved it, and it just happened, you know, on Monday night, so they designated money. What I'm understanding is you're just saying that mechanism generally is supporting the existing comp plan, but for whatever reason, you know, there aren't, I don't know if it's just the market, I don't know what it is, the complexity of getting development done, but, you know, just put it on par with the money that was allocated from the undesignated fund balance. If you put $400,000 in front of a developer, you telling me that nobody would take that?
I'm going to probably say something that normally I try to be neutral in a comment. I would just observe that I think it's not tactically the way I would go about it, were I not, you know, if I was outside the process, to pit one issue of relative community consensus against another. A request for, so this, you know, there's a constituency in this town that is very supportive of recreational issues in the center.
To say that, 52% of the general public.
Well, you know, hey, but
they're vocal.
Well, fine, but I just say to say, you know, I just think pitting one against the other is tactically I was involved in that advocacy, and I'm not actually.
I totally agree with you, and I meant to use it more as an analogy of how the town has a mechanism to get money associated with priority projects. So I agree with the rec center.
I do,
you know,
too.
And it's really interesting to see the expiration of the debt service and the zero-sum, you know, discussion regarding the finances of the town, because you've got expiring debt and now you can absorb this new debt. In addition to that, there's been undesignated fund balance money put over to help, you know, get this project up and out the door. So, you know, and I did a quick look here, and you know, South Kingstown is well north of halfway as far as our getting to the 10% goal, you know, 5.4%. I don't know what that means, though. I, you know, it's halfway to an arbitrary number that somebody in the General Assembly said that 10% is the goal. I don't know if that is the real goal. I mean, I know people that have doubled and tripled up in houses, and you know, folks that are kind of, you know, mortgaging, remortgaging, and from that, you know, to get mortgages. So if you just take it at face value in a mathematical perspective, we're probably halfway there. And I think
if we were had been more successful in these last few years, that perhaps we would see that percentage go up.
Yeah, I don't know what it takes to get. I mean, I see what Jeff has gone through in trying to get developments to occur. You know, it's nothing short of heroic, you know, to try to put together all the money. So I'm struggling. I'm just guessing. I'm trying to, like, let's kind of throw money at something. Does that help it? Because it's, I don't know what else it is. I think we can come up with a lot of different.
It's certainly part of the equation. Yeah. Big part.
Well, again, one of the more useful tools that have been taken from us was the Comprehensive Housing Affordability Strategy data that they used to publish that they don't publish anymore. Mm-hmm. That's an in-depth analysis of the real needs of housing in a community, and they don't do it anymore.
Mm-hmm. I was actually looking for that online today. Page not available.
Yeah.
So I think my point is that I think... if we were to try to be in lockstep with the town and your budgeting process, and as you're going through your comp plan update, if we had a goal of being well ahead of the curve by, you know, July or August, and in some, you know, meaningful, you know, initiative for the town to, you know, try something new, and if it ended up being, you know, the existing language that's a little more updated, something about inclusionary zoning, and then a reserve fund that was there in earnest that could be tapped. Mm-hmm. Not to say you don't have the mechanism in place, you do, but for whatever reasons, I don't know. If
I like the sound of that.
You know, I hear that's $10,000. $10,000 is not as attractive as $400,000. Mm-hmm. I'm just throwing that out there. Yeah. Whatever the number is,
it's a big difference in those two numbers.
Yes, sir. So,
but it's a lot of things, and if the I will say this, you can have programmatic and policy intentions and regulatory, but you know, ultimately it takes resources, and if there's a gap in what the private or nonprofit sector can bring to the table, it's got to get filled, or nothing happens.
And I'm hearing, you know, the first in money, the pre-development money, it is unfortunately at risk, as Jeff is describing. But if you had, you know, 6-8 months ahead of you to try to project where you might land in the next budget season, I think you could probably get some good feedback. And you're really, you know, talking about you know, the housing. Rhode Island housing, you're talking about developers, you know, Jeff understands this. I'm guessing at this point. I totally don't know. I'm just,
you know, I'll there is a schedule that they, for the budget consideration, which I don't have right in, but it plays out the whole budget, you know, and I'll send that to everybody just so you have the dates in mind. And the other thing, I think it would be a good idea to sit with the planning board. I think they would enjoy your company. And, you know, and I think it would be a good conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it would be helpful to the planning board as they, you know, narrow things down. Because, you know, you do set policy, and policy, you know, it's like...
we probably should have been doing it once a year anyways. But
yeah. Policy's like, you know, it's kind of like a... I look at it kind of like a pyramid sometimes. Because, you know, a lot of study develops policy, and many times that narrows to regulation and sometimes ordinance or requirements. A lot of times we say that in the context of the state. It's kind of like, if you look at it a continuum this way, it's like a pyramid on its side, like an arrow. And, you know, participation in the policy is important. If you come into the process too late,
right,
it's too late.
Right.
We've talked about the, you know, some of the studies that the state does, you know, like coastal resources or what have you. You've got to be there early and often to understand it, because it's leading somewhere. And, you know, this is really no different. But Interesting. So maybe in March, meet with the planning board?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's, I'll talk to Maria. We talk most days anyway. I saw her earlier today and up in big metropolis of Warwick.
Let's do that. We're going to ask to talk with them.
Yeah, yeah. I think they've mentioned that.
Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah.
But how about, should we deal with the land trust again or no?
You know what? I'll pull out that correspondence. Remember the one we had a few years back? And circulate it and think about.
Yeah.
And I can... hold.
And it'd be nice to identify some members like us that have this concern.
Right.
And how would we
do
that?
Well, members aren't interested. I just...
Because I think it would be a good selling point because it could bring more resources to the table for land preservation and at the same time deal with, some improvements in affordable housing.
I think that when she said that, she was talking about the people who give $10,000 for the brown. That's my gut. But there's got to be a lot of members like me.
In May?
Yeah, that... I can't give that kind of money. I do my $100 a year and a half for years. And be nice to... I'll ask around. You ask around. I'll start asking people if they're members and where are they on affordable housing.
I'll circulate a list of their... I know you guys, being members, know the board, but others may not, so...
I don't even know who's... I know some of the people on the board, but I don't know.
I mean, I get their newsletter and that's on their website. You can clip it off there.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. I'll take care of that. And we've been talking with the... I've been talking with Joanne quite a bit lately about the Whaley property.
Yeah.
Which, interestingly enough, land preservation is just as complicated as affordable housing in a lot of respects. And... you don't see single source acquisition money ever.
Right.
You used to.
Yeah.
Now, nope.
The thing is that land preservation thing, open space, is emotional somehow. Mm. But our affordable housing stuff isn't.
Those people.
It what?
Those people.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, it's disappointing, And I when you said let's go for the cash, I agree with you. I just felt right along that there's land there, and I like the Vermont thing that we could. Yeah.
It's in Vermont last weekend. You see it. You see what they've done.
I mean, yes.
And it's like it's a brilliant model, I think, because it fits.
We should find that. Mm-hmm. You had a video of that. Is that on YouTube now or something? Mm-hmm. Or?
Yeah. Yeah.
You should see that, what Vermont did with the combination of open space and affordable housing. It really was quite impressive.
I'll get that letter out, because I remember I thought that was a good letter.
Yes.
So paths in the woods, it was kind of over the top.
They have an advantage over us, because they got a lot of empty land.
Right.
Yeah. And we don't have that kind of thing, particularly in our town, maybe Gloucester, Foster, or... And we don't have any old mills that are not being used where developers have come in the past and done nice apartments there. And we don't have that kind of infrastructure to fill in.
Right. But, remember Palisades Mill, there was a long conversation about residential uses in there. Because Rhode Island Housing provided some. But the owners of the mill at the time said, well, no, we're not doing that, basically. They just...
And I drive through there when it's active and the climbing place. It's kind of fun.
Yeah.
But it wouldn't be bad to have 10 apartments spread out.
Well, it could be. I mean, he's even got some land still on Railroad Street that could be very nicely for a townhouse development.
That building could be used, as a matter of fact. It's underused.
What, Teeny's building?
Yeah.
And then going back towards the bike path, it would be perfect, actually, but...
Ah.
We talked about it. That's been pitched to the... When the Guariello's owned it, it was pitched to them. Where they were, but, now that's Bruce Thunberg's son owns it.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know he's been pretty good relationship with the Peacedale folks. I mean, that Peacedale neighborhood revitalization could maybe be a They seem to get getting more steam up lately, so that's good.
Yeah. So we have a few ideas to move forward to us beyond what that we're going to.
Yeah, I'll send some stuff on just so you see, and the scope of services, meet with the planning board. And, you know, we're getting more some development stuff that'll be coming at some point that'll need to come to you folks, too. I don't know about that Oak Street property or not. That's still some, I guess, the next time they're doing some legal support of the legal nonconforming aspect. I think they most recently did a affidavit from the former owner, Shirley.
Yeah.
Southwick, yeah.
And what's it about?
Well, it's whether or not those lots have legal nonconforming status prior to the imposition of zoning in the town in 1951.
Oh.
And the lawyers provided some information on it, and our lawyers said, well, it's not really sufficient, so then they went back, so it's, meantime, it's been postponed a couple
of
three
times.
Well, I don't know what Shirley would know about that. I had lunch with her a couple of weeks ago.
Well, that's clarifying, so we'll see with that.
What about Winter Street, Ben? Is it Hort? What's his name, Tom?
Mort?
Mort.
He's selling lots. He's recorded. In fact, it was in today's, he sold three lots, I think. I think one of the neighbors bought a couple to land bank. But he's got a couple of affordables up there. And Narragansett Housing's in Boston.
Yeah, we are, because I've had some interest in that lately. Yeah.
That nice little cul-de-sac. I walk in there quite a bit. In fact, the guy that did all the land, Romanoff, that did the digging in there, I think, I heard he passed away. Richard Romanoff?
A couple of deaths this week, huh?
Mm.
Nolan and Buddy today.
Buddy today, yeah.
So what do you think about you making a phone call, or should we send a letter to the Champlin Foundation to just, is that crazy?
We could look at what they're, we have to look at the website and see what they're funding.
Yeah, but we could say, how about 5 years from now? Would you consider this? We don't want to take any money away from whatever they're thinking. We just want them to be thinking about it.
Used to be, their main guy was Dave King. He lived in SK, and pretty much anything we wanted, he would.
Is he still here?
Or did he? I think he passed.
He passed.
He's a good guy. He used to, him and Steve were really close friends. And he'd come in all the time and, you know, almost say, what do you need? Yeah, but, you know, he took really good care of South Kingston.
Yeah.
You know, recreation, open space, you name it. Libraries particularly. I mean, they're still really strong with that. They provide a lot.
It seems like that's run with the person who has that job has a lot of power.
Well, he did. I think it might be more now with their board versus, I don't know.
I could just put the seed in their minds.
Let's look at that. Cheryl makes a good point about look at that website, see what they're into.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anything else?
Nope.
We'll call it a night.
Sure.
All those in favor of closing the meeting?
Okay.
Bye. Cheryl wants to stay.